Hello and welcome to the Squeaky Bum Time Podcast with Mike and Laurent. Laurent is back! Look, it's me!
It is
Tuesday, February 1st. In this episode, Canada really are kings in the north, like we said they were. The transfer deadline is dramatic! But first, Mike, we say goodbye to old friends and we say hello to new friends. Deli, Erickson, discuss.
I was looking at Transfer Market a few minutes ago, and they have the Transfer Market value for each of the players, and then they have what the team got for them. And next to Dele Alli's name, it says free transfer. Now, I know that that's not necessarily the case. I know that it's deferred money and blah, blah, blah. It's a Levy special, realistically, which is ironic. But I'm heartbroken. He's my guy. I've always gone to bat for him. I've never given up on him. I will not enjoy watching him play with Frank Lampard, which is another thing we got to talk about. I'm sad to see him go. I think they're foolish not to make it a loan. Like, you sold him at his literal bottom value point. Cool. Good idea, guys. Good business.
Yeah. And then Erickson, talk about Erickson.
Yeah. I mean, Brentford wants to make me love them again, I guess, but, they're not allowed to get frustrated with Erickson, I guess, because, you know, his heart almost exploded and all, but he's going to frustrate Brentford fans at times because they're not a team that necessarily plays in possession a lot. And he's not a hard worker when they don't have the ball. Mm-hmm. And this is when he didn't have an exploding heart. So they're going to love him.
What he will do, though, is they'll have those midfielders working. That out ball that goes to him, that he flicks to fucking Tony.
Well, I was going to say, yeah.
Is going to be gold.
Tony is the winner. And Mbeumo is the winner of that transfer.
Right. They're going to have to do a little less work. Because what will allow it to happen is I think Mbeumo and Tony will be able to just run. And the ball will go to Erickson. And they'll create space for him, right? Like, when the break happens, Erickson will be in space because that's what he's good at. And they're just going to take off.
Yeah.
And the vertical space will be created for Erickson to be in.
And it's so weird. I think he got a really bad rap towards the end of his time at Spurs. But like,
he was burnt out. They ran him into the ground.
He was burnt out. That's the literal phrase. Pochettino
actually killed him.
Well, that's the literal phrase I would use because he did run. On those Pochettino teams, he ran as much as anybody in the league on a per-game basis. And as I just said, a lot of Spurs supporters would see him slowing down. Now, again, this is when like you're trying to break down defenses, and it's not like Lucas Moura or Sonny is going to go win you that game. So the problem, though, is that I don't think Brentford will find themselves in a lot of those situations. I think that they'll be on the back foot a lot more than the front. So I'm curious to see how much of an impact he'll make. I'm happy. I'm happy he's healthy. I'm happy he's playing again. Thank God. I'm very happy to see him back in the Premier League, and I'm interested to see if he is a difference maker for Brentford, because I don't know that he is.
Well, I mean, they're going to stay up. So it's
right, that's what I mean. Like, okay, you know, they're mid-table. With him, they're mid-table. You know, like they're not...
But this is for the future and things like that. But we're going to go back to the transfer window. We said goodbye to friends. We'll go deep into this. But for our friends in England, this is a big deal. You can listen or not. We hope you stay because your former dominion, the Commonwealth of Canada, under Queen Elizabeth, defeated your rebellious big brother who kicks the shit out of you in every other way except football, the United States 2-0. Thank you for giving us both our language, both our laws, but we're both better than you. But Canada, it's truckers honking their horns or the way. It could be because they want to stop COVID restrictions or because Canada defeated the United States for the first time since 1980 without Alphonso Davies.
That's the thing that really got to me. This was not a strong Canadian lineup.
Nope.
This was a almost full strength U.S. lineup.
Yep.
And we got pantsed.
You know what it is? I'm going to say it this way. You ready? You ready for my analogy?
Go for it.
The United States under Berhalter are united under Ole.
Oh.
And I think Mexico are Arsenal under late Wenger. Okay. It's just kind of like the theory of these teams is there. The concepts of these teams are there. The way they play is there. Like Tata Martino's very Wenger, but he doesn't have the players, so they're old. And Berhalter is very Ole. It's just very Ole vibe. Like, this team should be better. And you just leave the games going, yes, we won, but. Yes, we beat Nicaragua, but. Yes, we're going to go and win this game, but. The performances are not there. The team is not coached. They have no cohesiveness. They have no plan. The ball goes into guys and they look up like, where's the next pass? Whereas Canada's like, boom, boom, boom. It's going to David. It's going to David. We're fucking going.
Yeah, it's going to Larin.
Everyone else runs for these two dudes. And when they get the ball, we're going to fuck you up because we know where the out ball is and we know where we're going to go. And we're not good, but we are Canadian lumberjacks. And this fucking middle class, suburban, orange fucking juice eating team is not strong enough to fuck with Canadians. We're hockey players. The ethos comes from farm boys. It's in Canada. And that's what Herdman brought to this team, because they were divergent and they did have ethnic problems of different soccer groups coming together. And he's somehow, being from Sunderland, this is the coach of Canada, and understanding regionality of that, brought that ethos of going, I see this in Canada. We need hockey mentality for our soccer team. And he's found this immigrant team of guys from Africa and from different countries, and he's somehow blended them into a Canadian team. It's incredible. And they're really fucking good.
And as we said just before we hit record, the system is set up for the Americans to qualify. And as we sit here with 10 games Mexico. In the bag, 10 games in the bag, out of how many is it? Is it?
It's like 140,000.
No, I think it's 14. I think we're getting towards the end here. Mm-hmm. Canada, first place, 4 points clear of the United States and Mexico, who, by the way,
undefeated Canada.
Four draws. We shoot over to Mexico. Mexico is in Jamaica, and I'm tracking this game because I love seeing Mexico lose. Just before halftime, the Jamaicans, the reggae boys, get a red card. Wow, that's it. That's all that's going to happen, right? No. In the 55th minute, the Jamaicans score. They go up 1-0 with a man down. Mexico, I get it. You're not the Mexico of yesteryear. You're kind of in between. They actually remind me of like 2016, 2017 U.S., where they're like, the old guard is still here. They probably shouldn't be, and there's not enough. Yeah, there's not enough to kind of come through. Fine. But come on. Down a man? You're going to let Jamaica go up 1-0 on you? And I was loving it. I did watch some of this game because I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I ended up turning it off. Mexico scores not one, but two goals in the three-minute span in the 81st, 82nd minute. They steal one in Jamaica. They steal it 2-1. So now here we are. We're tied. We're tied with the Mexicans on second. We have goal difference by one. So it literally can't be any closer. And Panama is 1 point behind with 17 points. Why is that significant, you ask? No problem. Three teams get automatic qualifying bids into the World Cup from CONCACAF. Feels like probably two too many. the fourth place team has to play a knockout playoff round
with against Asia.
Asia, Oceania, some shit like that.
Yeah,
if you listen to the terrible episode last time, I explained it. The U.S. now faces a game. I think they're in Honduras, who, to be fair, has 3 points from 10 games. They are comfortably last place.
They're bad.
But if they don't get 3 points out of this, if they don't win, they are now in danger of flopping all the way back to that fourth spot. And by the way, if Costa Rica wins their game, they're right there. And here comes the Trinidad and Tobago on the outside rail, right? So the U.S., I was watching the game with somebody who went, okay, well, what is this? What happens if the U.S. wins this game? Well, nothing, really. And nothing was good news, right? If the U.S. had won that game, they go clear of Canada. they're pretty much in the driver's seat. Again, with a few games to go, their ability to qualify gets laser focused. And they go, okay, there's four, their magic number is in sight. Now they go from top of the group and you get probably, you know, more benefit in the group seedings to now you don't know. You're back in the jackpot essentially, right?
Yeah.
So who knows?
I just loved Canada. Like the goal they scored off the bad kick from Matt Davis, the new keeper, not Stefan. It was short. Three touches and on goal, Laren finishes. And then David had a really good run where he touched and turned, and he was gone.
Yeah.
And only a save here and there. I mean, listen, the U.S. had their chances. I thought Adams was good. He's always busy, doesn't seem to have any way to link up with anyone. Pulisic is trying, but he's out of form, not playing very much. I love Aaronson. Like, Aaronson is my favorite
U.S.
men's national
team
player as well. Anytime I see fucking Jordan Morris, I think of Jones going, you didn't want to play? You want to stay home and play with your dogs? That's your excuse? I never want that guy playing for the United States because he has no ambition to be better. He should have gone to Germany and gotten his ass kicked. Yep. And the fact that he doesn't and he plays well in MLS comfortably with his dad, who's a doctor for the team, fuck you. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm an asshole, but I want hungry for the shirt. Like,
so
I want to the
you're
death.
You're not an
like,
asshole.
This matters, right?
Yeah,
like,
you're not an asshole.
Middle class bullshit.
And what you are, but for not for this.
Yeah.
He is a pussy. And that's okay. That's okay. It's actually never been – there's never been a time in human history where it's been more okay to be a pussy.
Yeah.
That's all right. But in a literal cutthroat scenario – where you're trying to qualify for the World Cup in a dogfight you shouldn't be in with Costa Rica, Panama, and Mexico, you don't get to be a pussy.
Give
you
me
push
the
your
immigrant.
Hard hat on or you get the fuck out of the way.
Give me the refugee family who found a country that took them in and struggled and then made themselves something out of it. Davies from Ghana. David is a Haitian immigrant who's born in Brooklyn. How come he's not an American U.S. national team player? I don't know. Don't ask. He was born in Brooklyn, Haitian. These guys have better stories. They have better narratives. They're fucking tougher.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, listen, oh, they're Canadian. It's nice. Try growing up a black kid in Toronto. It probably sucks.
Yeah.
Right? Where's our fucking black kids from Harlem on a men's national team? They're not on the team because we don't even find them. Like, how the men's national team isn't all Mexican still blows my fucking mind. Like, they're definitely better kids than who we have. Anyway. That's just my
I heard a hot take on the Daily Show. Shout out to Chris and Dave on the Chop Sports Daily.
Oh, nice.
Then they're not going to hear this. That's okay. Yeah. But they were doing a hot takes segment where they like some fucking knuckle dragger from the Chop Sports Facebook group, which you should totally join.
we love you, knuckle draggers.
Yeah, yeah.
We want our own knuckle.
It was like, oh, soccer stinks. Blah, 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 blah. And I went, yeah. Pick your jaw off the floor, you fucking moron. But the boys were talking about it, and Chris, it was your classic American sports fan, soccer blows, whatever. But what he was saying isn't untrue, that, you know, all of our best players play basketball. They play football, right? They don't necessarily play soccer, and that's why we get into a scenario where not only are we not sending our best through the soccer programs, but we're trying to find the refugees, right? We're trying to find the immigrants to come in and say, hey, show us the way forward here and have that, bring that hunger for us. We're not producing that hunger. We're importing it. And I think that that's a problem unless you have lightning strike like with Canada. But I know a mutual friend.
They also
friend,
have a better coach, by the way. Herdman
no, of
is
course,
a much
yeah.
better coach.
But a mutual friend once said to us, Michael Bramlage, if you were to put a billboard in Times Square and you had Cristiano Ronaldo's picture on it and you said, here's how much he's making every year. Here's how long his career is. And here are the last five women he's fucked. You would have a world power in 10 years.
Yeah. By the way,
guaranteed.
He's been a great influence on the locker room at Man United as Mason Greenwood. He's
Jesus.
Arrested.
What a segue. What a segue.
Arrested for for a potential rape where they have the audio of the things he said to this woman. Not
well,
great.
So wait,
I don't have it,
that,
but I don't want to repeat.
I have not listened to that.
It's
from what
bad.
I gathered from that, and this is not a sympathetic stance at all. It was his girlfriend, I think, that
oh,
they were that he's been lived with for years. And
oh, that part I missed. With.
Yeah. And and again, I'm not excusing or sympathizing or whatever, but I think what the storyline went, or at least from the Greenwood camp, is that like, it's been happening over the last few months, or the way that he has been around her in the last few months has been like 180 degree difference or something along those lines. And it's horrible. That's ridiculous, right? Like,
yeah, but we don't care. We don't want him to go to jail. We want justice. Whatever it was is really bad.
Oh,
from
yeah.
a footballing perspective, it's bad for United because he's good and they lost Martial. So now they're
right.
all of a sudden thin up front. Maybe that's why they're keeping Lingard, and we can go into the transfer window.
Yeah, let's get the fuck out of here.
Let's get out of that before we get into trouble, because we'll say something terrible. Anyway, Man United's Mason Greenwood suspended indefinitely under investigation for sexual assault of what may be his girlfriend. But the news came over on social media, so it's weird. I don't know what the kids are up to. Whatever it sounded like, it's bad. Cristiano Ronaldo famously got away with this with
hush money
in Vegas. So Cristiano, you know, he's got better lawyers than Mason Greenwood will ever have. I can just run through a couple of them really quickly. Over the line, let's do Spurs. Let's do cities really quickly.
Yeah.
City grabbed Julian Alvarez from River Plate, who was the MVP and top goal scorer for the Argentinian league. He's 21 years old. Lots of teams chasing him. The Argentinian contingent of Zabaleta and Aguero go to war for City. City get potentially a great player for £15 million.
Oh, yeah.
Because the release clause is nothing. So whether Julian Alvarez becomes the next City great, City get a really good high-end talent for very little money that they loan back, and he'll come back in the summer. It is expected that he will be part of the team, but everyone was in on him. The Argentinian league is a high-level league, but it will take a betting-in period. I would imagine he's more in the Gabriel Jesus camp versus the Aguero camp. Aguero, we remember, came into the – Aguero was in on his team in Argentina at 14 years old and was playing men's football from 14 to 18, then did 4 years in Atletico scoring goals for fun. So this is not the same level, but it is a potential talent. So that's City's only move. Arsenal lose Aubameyang, which is
on Alvarez.
Yeah.
So what if he's not, even if he's Jesus, right? Which
is good.
Which I think, for what you paid for Jesus, I think you could say he was probably a flop, right? Like, he probably didn't pan out the way that everyone thought he would.
Did not become Aguero's successor.
No, but he cost 50, 60 million. This kid coming in with 15, he was roughly around there, because I remember his first game was against Tottenham, and it was one of those back and forth games. That was the game where Kyle Walker, still on Spurs at the Etihad, sprinted all the way down the field and caught somebody, and it was definitely a red card, and they let us get away with it. And then Lamella to Eriksen, or Eriksen to Lamella, in the 85th minute, and we beat you at the Etihad many, many years ago. But what I'm saying is that if this is 15 million pounds, so what? Great. And for a team like City, literally a drop in the bucket. So I'm a huge fan of the move. I'm looking forward to seeing him next season. But yeah, I mean, just think about it like this. You offloaded Ferran Torres, and not that net spend means a fuck all to you people, but like, what is that? 55 million pounds, roughly.
It was a lot.
I'm looking at it in dollars, so I'm trying to do some math in my head, but like,
it's like 70.
Say 50 million, 55. Mm-hmm. You got a net spend of plus 40 out of a transfer window. When has that happened for City? So
City have been doing better at that of late.
Yeah.
So, you know, it hasn't been ideal, but, you know, it's been getting better.
If we have to talk about City, then we have to talk about the other, the Red Sox, right? If we're going to talk about the Yankees, we have to talk about the Red Sox. So,
okay.
So yeah, I mean, Luis Diaz, who's a guy that Spurs were chasing, that a number of clubs were chasing, they paid a pretty penny for him. And look, he's 25, he's Colombian, he's coming from Porto. I wonder if he's the level.
By the way, for Liverpool, that's a lot of money.
No, that's what I mean.
They Liverpool, don't make deals like that that often. So
Liverpool big, masquerade themselves very well, I might add, as a Chelsea, as a Man City, as a Real Madrid.
They're not.
They're not. No. They're very much not.
Yeah, it's usually even in, even out.
Yes, but what I'm saying is that when they make big strikes, not unlike Spurs, they can't miss, and they frankly haven't. Granted, Salah was a cut rate deal. It was like 17, 20 million, something like that. But Van Dijk was 75 million. If they didn't, then they're up Schitt's Creek
A perfect example. He missed the season last year. They almost fucking missed the Champions League. That's right. How important he was. Now, they lost four other defenders, but Joe Gomez has never come back.
That. But largely the point is when they make these splashes, they seem to work out.
Yeah.
I'm less keen on Diaz than some of them. But it's easy to say that because you've got the hindsight of all these successful players. Well, Mane, Salah.
I don't know him perfectly, but what I have heard from my latest podcast shows is that he's wildly improving from season to season. So he's at Porto, a good league at a good level. And he is a guy who makes bangers. Like his goals are really good.
Yeah.
And I think where they are is they know that Firmino, Mane, Salah is ending.
Right.
And I think if you held their hands to the fire, they would have sold one of them by now. But I think that the pandemic to cash in. I think that pandemic. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it would
really hurt them. There's nowhere to put them, right?
Nowhere to sell.
Nowhere to cash in.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
So they can't. They can't go. There isn't $170 million from Barcelona anymore.
If you turn the clock back 2 years, which sounds fucking crazy to say out loud at this point, because we're literally right at the tip of the iceberg of this 2 years ago, but it felt like that summer Salah was going to Madrid, right? Like,
right. It was in the air. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And obviously that didn't happen, but
right.
But yeah.
And now that money's gone, like it's evaporated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now teams come to the Premier League to get our money. It used to be that money would flow from Real and Madrid into the Premier League. Uh-huh. We'd build guys up and kind of, it would trickle out. Like one of the things that I'd love to think about, and it never gets told about, is like, what is the flow of all transfers? How much is going out into nothing? Right? Because do you know what I mean? Like, how much is the agent's fees? How much is going back into the system? Like, in one season, is it all money moving around? Like, how much of the Premier League money is funding all the other teams? A lot. Right? I'd love to know. I mean, I'm sure some nerds have done
now.
That. It has, but it has, it's really just.
I like, would when say people it's say, been about a year.
Well, here's the
Premier
thing,
League
right?
was mostly
internal.
It was internal stuff, right? So a lot of Bale and Coutinho and Suarez, right? Like
right, but
these
here,
big names were leaving.
Yeah, but here's the thing that's really frustrating when people bag on when we go through Newcastle's dealings. They spent 110 million pounds.
Yeah.
That money's, first of all, they overpay and that money's going to other teams, right? Like all of a sudden, you know, Dan Byrne costs $500,000 for Brighton. They're getting $15 million for that guy.
Yeah.
Brighton's going to do really well with that $15 million. They're going to be like, you gave us what? For who? This guy was at Wigan. He's 32 years old. He's half retarded.
That's right? Wait, you just hit on something. That's a huge part of the ecosystem. Because what has come into the Premier League in the last 10, but even more so in the last 5 years? New ownership money, right?
And it flows.
But whereas the kings of the castle were always Barca, Real, PSG, obviously a couple in the Premier League, but not on that level aside from City, I suppose, and Bayern, right? Those were the four.
Bayern's cheap. They don't fund anybody. They fund their own league. That's it.
Right, but largely my point is that those four were the four horsemen at the table of like the richest teams, right? I get United, but they never really. I don't know. They never felt like
they
to
put
that
some
level.
Big money into Juve. I mean, they spent $86 million on almost $100 million on Pogba. They spent
a lot.
They spent a lot on Lukaku.
Yeah.
They spent a lot of money on
players.
True.
I guess when I look at United, I never think of them as, and Pogba is it, I suppose, but I never think of them as like, when I think of the Bale money or Coutinho or Hazard, right?
But yeah, because they fuck it up. It's a catastrophe.
Yeah.
Right? Like, who's the guy they got with the piano? I mean, from Arsenal. And they just,
Alexis Sanchez?
Disaster.
Oh, God, that was fun. Oh, that was hilarious.
Speaking of Alexis Sanchez far and home, the Arsenal faithful, you are really sad right now. And I think that from a Spurs perspective, Arsenal have had the worst window. They bring in no one. No. They bring in a guy called Austin Trusty, owned by the Kroenke family, out of the Colorado Rapids, to start in July. Never heard of him. Don't know who he is. They lose Aubameyang, Balogun, Maitland-Niles, Kolasinac, Chambers, Mari. This is just going through older ones. Just tons and tons of outgoing players. But Aubameyang is a big deal. I know he was out of sorts, but that is really saying we don't care. And he went on a free, and he's gone. That's big, because that's the last of Wenger, I think, or maybe it's Lacazette.
Lacazette would be the last, okay. Aubameyang was a paradigm shifting signing, or so they thought, and they always felt like he was and wanted him to be. I have news for you: he was never. But
he had two 20 goal seasons.
Sure, that's fair.
And he won him an FA Cup. Because I would watch that game, he killed City.
Okay. Yeah, and by that stretch, you can say that he was a success. But he was the guy who came in, and you know why? Because he's the fastest motherfucker in FIFA, and everybody was like, "Oh, God damn it, dude!" Like, great. Every Arsenal fan in the world is gonna have this motherfucker on their team now. Gonna be the guy that brought them back into title contention, and that never happened.
I think the issue with Aubameyang really is he only has one way to play. I think everyone knew it. He would never, like, and you notice it whenever Lacazette plays, he can never drop into the midfield and create options for you. He wants to run in behind and cut in the left, and he's good. He's just a luxury type player. He did have good seasons. I think, you know, he had his moments, but he's just, for Arteta, he's not the player he needs, and he found the excuses by continually fucking up and not understanding traffic patterns in London.
Right.
He just wouldn't show up to work and would blow it. So
he just, in so much as you talk a lot about how they have that Englishness, they have the Arsenal way, they've all come up together. Aubameyang was the elder statesman of the group, and he was supposed to be the guy instilling all of that, or helping.
And he wasn't. He's not a leader.
He's doing the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. And let's go to the other team that I think starts with A, that's already had a great window, and that's Villa. We already know about Coutinho. They bring in Digne, already helping them. They weirdly grab Callum Chambers. I don't know what that's for, but maybe somebody knows something about something. The big ones to leave are Anwar El Ghazi, who was a nice little player who would score a goal here and there. He goes to Everton, and Matt Target, with Digne and Chambers arriving. I like Matt Target, a hardworking fullback, goes to Newcastle on loan. So Villa, consolidate, improve the team, and move players out. I'm going to keep on going pretty fast.
Hold on. I think Aston Villa wins the window. I think they had the best window of any club in the Premier League. I don't think it's close.
Well, Coutinho would have been enough.
Or Digne by itself.
Yeah.
By himself. Yeah. So two really, really strong signings. I sat here on last week, and I lamented a lot of the lack of activity. I really discounted what Villa had done to that point, but really happy with what they've done. And I think that that'll solidify things along with the Gerrard belief kind of coming in, right? So he's bringing in his guys.
I watch the interviews because, you know, we're starved for content in the Premier League. Like, it's two interviews and the games.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And now it's 2 weeks in between games.
Yeah. There's no coverage of anything. You're getting nothing. So when you see Gerrard, and maybe it's just because I respected him as a player, you're just ready. You're like, he's got the jacket on. He looks very serious. He never gives too much praise to his players. He's like, I'm glad we did well. I expect them to do well, and we're going to do better. And and we can segue in, because Algazi went to Everton, into Everton's window. They made some moves as well. Yep. The biggest being they actually hire Frank Lampard, who does not, for me, have Gerrard's gravitas.
No, I think
there's something about the Scouse death march. Like, they absolutely have to win. There's something about Scouse personality. Whereas Lampard was made fun of because he's the son of a football player.
And who was,
and his uncle, he was around football. So he's not as out for blood and death and I have to win. He is a winner. I don't discount any of those things. But they bring in a bunch of players. Algazi, Dele Alli, like we said. But the other coup, they grab Van der Beek from Manchester United. So that's, we expect at least a midfield improvement, which is what they desperately needed, because they were playing workers. I mean, Allen and Doucouré are good, but they lack the creative piece to get the ball into Calvert-Lewin. And if I remember from... And they lose Digne, which was a catastrophe.
They lose Digne, but they bring in Mykolenko from Kiev.
I don't know.
And I don't. I'm curious why anything in Ukraine is worth $26 million right now. So, I mean, buildings, people, anything. So
you can buy some rocket, some anti-tank weapons.
Right, they need exactly. Yeah,
hopefully they got that money for protecting their buildings. Right. But yeah, the thing I do remember about Lampard is he's not a great coach. He kind of would say things that Chelsea was going to press. He'd say, we're going to attack, and they would attack and give up goals.
So,
and
let's
Everton
talk about...
give up goals, because as long as Michael fucking Keane is in the back for that team, they're going to ship goals, because he's fucking terrible. And so is Pickford. Pickford dives out of saves more than any person I've ever seen in my fucking life, because he's too short and he has to do maximum effort to do saves. So I never understand that.
An interesting, I don't like Frank Lampard. I don't like Chelsea, whatever, but looking at objectively, I like him at Everton. Why? Sure. Two reasons. One, it's not Chelsea right out of the gate. Here's the fucking Premier League, buddy. You've played here, but you've never managed here.
Yeah.
So that was always a fail. Like, think about the contrast of Lampard and Gerrard. When they retired, they're both legends. They're both great or whatever. Our introduction to Lampard was shit, right? Like, he was, granted, he was given a war chest and all that stuff, but he was given expectations that he was never going to live up to. Mm-hmm. Conversely, our introduction to Gerrard was in the Scottish League. He brought Rangers to an undefeated season. That's not any small feat, but it's
over
also
3 years, not one season and a half promotion that ended up destroying the club. Right. Like it's Frank Lampard's failure at Derby to get promoted that destroys that club.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Now they pushed it, whatever, it's fine. But it is a little bit like that. So
then him being at Everton and ironically, you've got Gerrard at Villa. They're both in significantly low pressure situations. They're in prove it to me situations where they can go out and stamp their name and do it. But we're gonna learn a lot more about Lampard at Everton the next half of this season than I think we did at Chelsea.
The Aston Villa situation, if Gerrard is as good as he appears to be, that team is good. That's a
sure.
If I'm Spurs, I'm worried about them. Maybe not this season.
I'm worried about
next
our own fucking selves.
Right. But you at least, so Spurs, you do lose two players. We said goodbye already, but you have two new friends.
We do. We have new friends. We have raided Juve's back fucking room. I don't hate it. I don't love it. Let me talk a little bit more about who left, because that to me is the story of this transfer deadline day. Giovanni Lo Celso, loan. Tanguy Ndombele, loan that they're giving us a little bit of cash for, that hopefully they will exercise a £65 million buy clause. I don't know why the fuck you would do that. It might as well be $1 billion for Ndombele, but get him the fuck out of my club. I don't want to ever see him wear a Spurs shirt again.
Goodbye, friend.
Get out. I was sad that Lo Celso didn't work out, especially because he's always very good for Argentina. Yeah. Brian Heal goes back on loan to Spain, where he can kind of run rampant a little bit. So I'm happy to get those guys off the books, at least even just for now. and bring in Kulusevski and Betancur. I don't see Kulusevski's not one for this year. I think he's that's fine.
I think the good thing from Spurs' perspective is these guys have value in them, right? Sure. They're not the finished article. They're both under 23. Both haven't really gotten the shot, but I think that the fact that they were at Juve, which is the top club, and listen, Conte might not have been at Juve for a long time, but at least there is a consistency of what you know they should know. Do you know what I
mean? Well, so the thing is that, right, so you've got two Juve heads in the room now.
Right.
And because you've got Paratici, who basically was the guy who did all of these deals to bring the players, all of the players that Spurs were rumored to be speaking to with Juve for the last 6 months, 8 months. But right, like you said, Conte saw them on the ground floor. He knows exactly what they're about and exactly what they're not. So I trust him. I'm happy to give him the keys. I'm very upset about Dele still, but I like Betancur a lot because I just need somebody in the midfield who's not Harry Winks or Pierre-Emerick Højbjerg at this point. Yeah. And I'm happy to give him a shot right out of the gate.
Yeah.
We'll see. He's Uruguayan, which means he's a good defensive midfielder.
So I'm going to go through some teams. I'll go through some teams that didn't do anything and that makes me worry. Norwich, nothing. Yes. Southampton, nothing. Watford had a bunch of ins, but they're African guys that I don't know what they're about. So we already know the big one you called out, West Ham, nothing. They're basically saying we're not making the top four. We know about Wolves and Traore leaving.
Because this signals the for sale sign on Declan Rice's forehead for me.
Yeah, okay.
Right? Because they're basically saying, we're not going to make Champions League. We're going to basically put up the white flag. We're going to do what we can this year. We've got a good, tight-knit squad. They have a chance still, but like this was – West Ham and Spurs in this regard are very similar, and I talked about this last week. They are stuck in between. They don't have the funds to go out and get a big difference-making player that will put you into that serious top four, maybe even third conversation. But you don't – like, your team's good. So you don't have the ability to go out and go get somebody huge to go make them better. But at the same time, you're not going to spend – what do you spend 10, 15 million pounds on a guy for? To bring him in just to bench play? Okay. Right? Like,
I think West Ham are looking for Jesse Lingard, and if they can't get Jesse Lingard, they do nothing. And yeah. United must have had the news about all the bullshit that went on with Greenwood, and they let Martial finally go, and they were like, no, you can't go. And so they're going to keep him. Whether he plays or not is different. But I do think from a relegation fight perspective, Burnley do get their striker in Weigout, who's basically a replacement for Chris Wood, and they put $10 million in their pocket. They clear out some other guys, but Palace doesn't do much. They don't need to. They're in good shape. I do fear for Leeds. Leeds did nothing. That was bad. Chelsea didn't need to do anything because they have 40 billion players that they still need to weed out. My friends from Brighton do something weird. They do lose Dan Byrne to Newcastle, and we're going to go into Newcastle now because Newcastle are probably – the most interesting team within the context of this thing. They're still, on paper, the worst team in the Premier League in terms of expected goal difference against. They did get a win just before the break, so they get to say, okay, we're not going down. And they go out and spend £100 million. Watford gets to live.
This on the show last week. That's more than the entire league in each of the last two, maybe even three January transfer windows. Only two, actually. No, the third one was higher than that.
So what
they're spending like kids who are in a fucking candy store.
So what they get out of this is essentially three out of four of a back four: Burn, Target, and Trippier. They get a midfielder in Guimaraes from Lyon to connect this all together. Chris Wood up front. They essentially recreate a spine of their team. They'll probably go with Jamal Lascelles. He is the captain of the team, and he'll pair with Byrne up front. Although Lascelles is pretty bad as well, but their defense is awful. And they do send some players out. Jeff Hendrick goes out. Matty Longstaff goes out. A bunch of guys they've had just sort of go out into the world. One thing I did notice, and this is sort of in my lower league places, if you recall our friends from Norwich, Mr. Todd Cantwell, we remember him as being like, oh, maybe he's the next James Maddison. He gets loaned to Bournemouth. So
no, he came back in from a loan.
He was supposed to be Norwich. So Maddison was on Norwich and sold to Leicester. But Cantwell was supposed to be the next Maddison type.
I know, sort of wiry,
attacking creative midfielder. And he just never kicks on in the Premier League. And he's now sent to Bournemouth. He is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Bye-bye, Bournemouth. I was reading it wrong. Okay.
No. That's okay. There is loans and things moving around. But no, Newcastle,
he's in the in and out. I think he was loaned in and then loaned back. I don't fucking know. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So he's out. And I think that Norwich are just resigned to the fact that they're going to go down. But Newcastle do reload, and it'll be interesting to see if Eddie Howe can get this team moving. Hopefully we won't see the likes of fucking Bald Voldemort. I can't remember his name anymore. Jonjo Shelvey in the midfield anymore, because he's really bad. Target's a good player for Villa. He's a servant for the club. Dan Byrne, as a person who, as you know, watches a lot of Brighton. Dan Byrne is surplus. He is a good player, but they didn't need him because they have Dunk, they still have Duffy, and they have Webster, and they have Lamptey, and they have Cucurella. So Dan Byrne was playing when they had injuries. He was a 6'7" guy playing fullback, which was amazing. But, you know, he's one of these guys. It's basically, you know, he's a player. He doesn't give up. He plays hard, and he played it within the team concept. But I expect with these moves, Newcastle has to stay up now. I mean, this is a...
Yeah.
This is a statement of we're staying up. The narrative of them going down would be incredible.
It would be so good.
They got to stay up at this point.
Well, you said it. I mean, that's the team for next year that I'm afraid of going right by Spurs like we're standing still, because we fucking are standing still. but yeah, I mean, I looked at this on Friday and I said, there's got to be a way for Newcastle. It's just so much money and time pissed away. If you go down this year, you just have to. And if money truly is no object, you have to go out and you have to spend a bunch of money.
Here's the
and
they did. Thing.
And they don't have to. They don't have to compete with fucking West Ham, Man United, Spurs, and Arsenal for top four. They're competing with Norwich, Watford, and Burnley here, for fuck's sake.
You go step by step. They already tried to clip. They tried to clip the wings of Burnley and grab the player. They grabbed. That's where your shopping unit starts. As a person who experienced this with beloved Manchester City, they essentially raided the teams nearby them that they relatively had to get a hold of to move up. A lot of Aston Villa players, a lot of Everton players at first, in the first couple years, a lot of that kind of thing. Then as they went further along, they picked off players. But, I mean, aside from Yaya Toure, I'd say none of the players that City really grabbed were from major powers. I mean, yes, David Silva ended up being great. He came from Valencia.
Bakari Sagna.
Yeah, but those were declining Arsenal players.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's not like, they weren't like buying players from PSG. I mean, the Tevez deal is the one, right? They said, fuck you, Man United. That's the one, right? That's the big one that really started the war. That's the noisy neighbor. But like, you know, Gareth Barry and fucking Julian Lescott, these guys are, I mean, they crippled the teams near them, but it didn't matter at the time. So, but that's how you have to do it. So that gives me hope for Everton, for Newcastle, in that they sort of understand the predicament that they're in and are going to pull the teams near them down to their level, because step you just have to be better than three teams.
Yeah.
That's it. And I think they're clearly better than three teams now.
Are you rooting for them to stay up? Because is the reason why you're rooting for them so that in a couple of years you have a proper fucking rival? Is that what
we want here?
Because I don't want that at all. And by the way, I think I'm the biggest capitalist you probably know or fucking proponent of it. But whatever. I think I'm the one sitting here saying I don't want any fucking part of them. Not because I think what they're doing is bad for the league, because what they're doing is functionally and 100%, no doubt about it, bad for Tottenham Hotspur. So that's
Arsenal, Spurs, and the Liverpool. Legacy clubs that have been struggling.
Yeah, for lack of a better word. It's Arsenal, Spurs, and Liverpool. with United will be fine.
I mean, Liverpool is living off Klopp. Like, I think that without Klopp.
No, what I'm saying is that there's another stratosphere of purchasing power that's about to enter the league, and they're going to make you look like the guy with, you know, fucking holding his hat.
Well, we're good. We've got the system in place. We're
right, fine. You're fine. But you won't be
fine until Pep is gone. When Pep is gone, I don't know what's going to happen.
No, I think you just come back down a little bit, but you have
it'll be
back.
Good, right? We'll lose those five to seven points that Pep puts
right off the top. Definitely. Yeah. We'll and maybe you win a big Champions
into the
mid
80s, and then bad seasons be at 80.
No, of course. But what I'm saying is that you have the infrastructure and you have the purchasing power to do fucking frankly whatever you want, right? Liverpool does not. Chelsea does. Man United,
but I think
has
Chelsea,
it. I don't know if they operate well with it.
Chelsea's
but,
now in a sustainable system, though, right? Like they've all that's what I'm these saying. Are smartly run company teams. The one that's not the one that's fucking everything up is United because they make. Let me say it clearly to the camera. Clearly, Manchester United have as much money as all the big clubs in the world. They just suck at it.
No. And again, that's I'm not concerned with that.
Yeah.
But what I actually am concerned for is Liverpool because, as we talked about early in the show, they are not one of these super rich clubs, right? John Henry is a stingy prick. LeBron James is just a prick. But
they're two players away from sucking.
Yeah. Well, no. They're probably. I don't even think it's players. I just think it's time at this point because, and this is why Jota hitting was so big because it wasn't that he broke the bank. But he was the bridge, right? They haven't missed a fucking beat. Granted, City have reached another level, I would argue. And maybe Liverpool stumbled maybe this much of a half step.
Yeah.
But Jota kept them on the same plane. And that's what the hope Diaz coming in is going to do too. Diaz is Mane part two, right? Yeah. So
could,
if he can
could
be
that. Or he might not be. You don't know. Weird. There is a lot of stuff. But I trust Klopp. Although they haven't really brought many players.
I don't trust Klopp to stay there very much.
No. But it might be Gerrard. If Gerrard has success, he will be in line for that Liverpool job. Like
Yes. But what the point I'm making is that United, Chelsea, and City have an advantage. They hit from farther away tees and they bomb it further past you. How about reference?
One thing that I have noticed is during this period, there was a thought piece soccer media thing going on of how the leagues are in trouble. How do we fix this? There was Germany is this and the money is changing everything and blah, blah, blah. You literally could use that article, these morons who went crazy over the Super League. They literally wrote the article for why you need the Super League.
Yep.
Because the same five teams keep winning everywhere. If you keep saying it out loud, if you don't think that the big fucking 15 teams don't use that article, and they're going to go, hey, we saw this article, and we kind of know, you know, what it means. We got to go.
Yeah.
Right? So I do accept responsibility of City being one of the reasons for it, but I also accept that Pep is exceptional.
Wait a minute. Why the fuck is everybody in Germany glad-handing everything to fucking Bayern Munich?
I have no idea about
this. So let's start there, savvy journalists. Why don't we start talking about how the entire German ecosystem is built to prop up one club
that they all loud. Hey, look at you.
So that they can – it's like the SEC when Bama wins. They all just pound the table, SEC, right? They're basically fucking degenerates. You're talking about Germany has become the Kentucky and the Arkansas of the United of Europe. Okay.
I don't understand that piece. Now, I did get into this argument with someone who's a Bundesliga. There's those Bundesliga apologists that are always trying to make Bundesliga a thing. I'm like, it was on ESPN and they do not care. They put that shit on Fox. They put the Clásico on Fox. Nobody watches it. There are not international Bundesliga fans. They literally don't exist.
But I will argue against that because in 10 years ago, the Dortmund versus Munich Champions League final. That was unbelievable. That was drawing viewers. They had an opportunity.
They said,
no, we're just going to make sure this one team's always really, really fucking good and they can compete with anybody in Europe. Okay, but what you got out of that was nobody gives a shit about the rest of your league. And you know what's funny? You don't speak English, so that's a big strike one for what I was about to say. But you have so many of the up-and-coming U.S. men's national team stars. I should use stars a little more judiciously, I suppose. But, I mean, holy shit, guys.
They're so insular, they just can't seem to see outside of Germany.
You had a literal pipeline starting in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and you grew it significantly. And not everybody was a big hit, but Josh Sargent is in the Premier League now. And he's scoring goals.
He scored and, that.
And nobody even
goal.
Pretends to care that he was ever in Germany. Nope. Right? There's a communications problem here. And it's not just like you said, oh, there's only two articles and a couple of highlights. It's everywhere. Germany, what else are you guys doing? Are you coming up with
They're
some
very,
other plan?
Very insular about their league. They have that protectionist thing. They think about it in terms of things. They do have things like, people from England will go to Germany to watch games because it's cheaper to fly and go to a game in Germany than watch a game in the Premier League.
Yep.
That's how cheap it is. So they do have some things that I think are good. I do like their pipeline. I do like all the coaching. France is putting more international players into more countries. At the last World Cup, they had 48 players who were born in France who are French nationals, but obviously representing in other countries there. But their league is a little bit jacked up because of PSG. Spain is completely on the decline. The whole thing's falling apart. Where Barcelona found all this money to get Pierre Aubameyang and Adama Traoré. By the way, we're going to see some really fast running and some really bad finishing. I can't wait for Xavi to try and do possession-based stuff with Traoré and fucking Aubameyang when they don't drop back and they don't do anything. It's going to be great because those dudes don't press. They don't do shit. It's going to suck. And when Bayern Munich goes, we would like to buy Frankie de Jong from you, we pay you £50 million. And he's like, what? How did Bayern Munich get Frankie de Jong? Because he's really good and you guys used him badly. Like, or he'll be in City and just replace. Actually, we have him already. We have a better version. We have Rodri, who's better than Frankie de Jong. Although he was really good in that Ajax season.
Respect. We have a Rodri.
We
have a Rodri now. I'm excited. I thought about that today.
Oh,
we have a defensive midfielder named Rodri.
He's not the same. No, he's not. He's super tall. But I think we have to wrap it up.
Can we
have
games
on Saturday, though?
We do?
Yes.
FA Cup. Oh, no. It's only Tuesday, though. We'll talk about that on Thursday.
We have Burnley playing Watford, the third time they've tried to play this game.
Oh. Which, okay. But again, it's Saturday. Fine. Okay, so we have a little bit of time. But that's a relegation six-pointer like you read about.
Okay,
that is a huge game.
You have to tell me. Quick, who won the window?
Oh, Villa. Not close.
It's Newcastle. Who lost the window?
Arsenal.
I agree on that. All right, I'm going to take us out of here. That was the Squeaky Bum Time podcast. I'm back, and I hope I don't have to leave again, with Mike Salerno and Laurent Cortines. We are the football wing of the Chop Sports Network, who are deep in the NFL playoffs. Wow, the Bengals. That's bad for ratings. We record on Tuesdays and Fridays, so be sure to subscribe and get your podcast wherever so you never miss an episode. And if you're listening on Apple, please rate or review the show because we need you. And this was our best episode. Listen to the Canadian part. Bye.